Ah, good afternoon. Come in, come in. Let me offer you a glass of sherry, a tale or two, and perhaps one of my priceless antiques.
Tales of Antiquity. Stories of the romantic past captured through the eyes and ears of Eustace Glean, collector extraordinary. His story for today, Gone at the Fair.
There you are, at your elbow. I trust it isn't too dry for you. Now, let me see. What can I show you today? Are you interested in personal jewelry? Cameos, for instance? Oh, take a look at these. This one in particular. It is the work of James Sassy in 1763 and a reproduction of an original Hellenic example of 350 BC. It was given to Mrs. Matilda Monckton on the occasion of her wedding in 1862 by her mother-in-law and later inherited by Mrs. Monckton's daughter under rather mysterious circumstances. Let me tell you their story. Quite an intrigue. The Monctons had served their country in India since the days of Robert Clive in the 1750s. It therefore followed that Sir Frederick Monckton's youngest son should likewise serve with the Indian Army after concluding his studies at Eton and Oxford. However, he had become acquainted with the pretty fair-haired Matilda McKendrick. Their whirlwind romance was the talk of Oxfordshire, and within a mere 6 months were married. After Sandhurst, Charles Monckton received his commission and was appointed to join his father's old regiment in the Punjab. Naturally, Matilda was to go with him. Charles Monckton was the only surviving male of his line, his father and two older brothers having died in the mutiny of the 1850s. His mother had returned to England in 1860 and died in her bed shortly after her only remaining son had left for India. She therefore never knew or saw her only grandchild, Valerie, born in Lahore in 1865. The Monctons' lives ran customarily to those serving in the British Raj with all the social graces, summer retreats and so on until 1887 when the dashing Charles Monckton died as his platoon was ambushed during a skirmish on the northwest frontier. Valerie was a beautiful young woman of 22 at this time and was longing to see something of her native Europe. Her mother, having nothing now to hold her in India, decided upon a short tour of the continent before settling down to find her daughter a suitable match in England. It was the year 1889, the year of the Great Paris Exhibition. Mrs. Monckton and her daughter had disembarked at Marseille and travelled by train to Paris, where they now secured two rooms at one of its most famous hotels.
Well, my dear, our travels are over. For a while, at least.
We shall only be in Paris for 2 weeks, Mama.
Even a respite of 2 weeks is better than no respite at all.
Madame and Mademoiselle have traveled far.
Extremely far, Monsieur. My daughter and I have recently returned to Europe from India.
A little under 3 months, Monsieur.
We are actually returning to England. But my daughter was positively obsessed with the thought of your great exposition. She simply refused to set foot out of France.
Mama, you exaggerate. Naturally, since our journey was to take us through Paris, it seemed a positive waste not
yes,
to see
yes, be that as it may. Do you have rooms for us, Monsieur? So sorry.
Audrey, madame. Yes. Claude Audrey, at your service. And yes, I have two magnificent rooms overlooking the Boulevard Rochechouart. Number 342 for you, madame, and for your charming daughter, number 340. If I might trouble you to sign the register. Hugo, escort the two ladies to their rooms, 340 and 342.
You're so kind. Oh, oh dear.
What is it, Mama?
Madame is not well.
Oh, how very strange. Suddenly had the most extraordinary sensation. I went positively dizzy, as though I were about to collapse. Oh, dear. I feel quite flushed.
The journey, I expect, madame. Once you have rested in your room, perhaps I might send up some refreshment.
I don't quite Yes. Yes, perhaps some tea. Oh, dear. I really think I ought to lie down.
Come along, Mama. Let me take you away from my room.
The refreshments will be up directly.
Mother and daughter were shown their rooms on the third floor, which they said it would suit admirably. Mrs. Monkton's was by far the grander, with heavy curtains of plum-coloured velvet, rose-covered wallpaper, high-backed sofa, oval satinwood table and ormolu clock. Valerie left her mother to sleep for a while, saying she would call for her in 2 hours. But the young lady had barely been in her room half an hour when there came a frantic scrabbling at the handle. She hurried to the door to see what could be amiss.
Valerie!
Mama!
What's happening? I'm most unwell. Shall I go and fetch me?
You're positively burning. I must get you back to your bed.
Must have.
Yes, Mama. Yes, Mama, I shall go and fetch a doctor directly. But first, you must get back.
The young woman struggled with her mother until the poor woman was once again in her own bed. Then she hurried down to the reception to find the manager.
Monsieur Audrey?
Ah, Mademoiselle Monkton, how was your room? It will suit, and your mother?
My mother, monsieur, is most dreadfully sick. She has a high fever and complains pains in her head and throat.
Oh, you, we must call Dr. Corbeil. I mean, you go!
What is it, Doctor?
Yes. Maman. Excusez-moi. Monsieur Audrey.
What? Audrey, this is Valerie. What does the doctor say?
Nothing at the moment. He is talking with a hotel manager.
Is it serious, do you think? Can you not hear what they say?
They talk too softly, Mama.
Doctor! What is it? What's wrong?
Shush, madame. You must not excite
yourself. But what is it?
Lie still now and try to rest. You have pneumonia.
Pneumonia?
I urge you not to grow excited. Fortunately, we catch the malady in time. But my medication, it is at my chambers, the other side of Paris. I dare not leave the patient. I wonder, mademoiselle, would you... Do you think you'd be so kind as to take a carriage?
Is there no one else? One of your porters, monsieur?
With the hotel full to capacity, there is no one I can spare.
It is most urgent, mademoiselle, that I remain here. If your mama does not have medication soon...
Very well, doctor. I shall go. If you will give me the address.
The girl set out for the doctor's surgery on the far side of Paris, taking the doctor's own carriage that seemed to simply drag its way across the city at an exasperatingly slow pace. After an agonized wait at the surgery, she at length made her way back to the hotel, which was no faster a journey than the one she'd made in the other direction. 4 hours had elapsed from the time she set out until the time she returned to the hotel.
Oh, Monsieur Audrey, comment va ma mère?
Pardon, mademoiselle?
My mother. I ask after my mother. Is she...
But, mademoiselle, I know nothing of your mother. You arrived here alone.
See, what are you saying? It was you who sent for Dr. Colbert.
Dr. Colbert, oui. I know the good doctor, but why would I send for her?
Because my mother is sick, monsieur. You and Dr. Colbert were together in her room when the doctor examined her and asked me to go and fetch the medication from his rooms at Saint-Lin.
Mademoiselle, I have no idea. I assure you, you arrived here alone.
But this is unbelievable. Very well, monsieur. Look in your ledger. We registered here less than 6 hours ago. Look in the book.
Here we are on this place. You see, mademoiselle... Here is your signature.
And above it, what? Whose name is that? That name was not there when I... My mother signed her name immediately above my signature. We both signed. My mother was given room 342. She's up there now. Take me to her at once.
Mademoiselle.
I insist that you take me to her, monsieur.
Oh, very well, mademoiselle. But I assure you, we have a family from Boulogne. 342. Here you are, mademoiselle.
But this is not 342.
Oui, mademoiselle. You see, clearly on the door, 342.
But the plum-colored curtains, the roses on the walls, and the clock, where are they? No, this is the wrong room. The room with pink roses and plum velvet curtains and not yellow, monsieur.
Mademoiselle, this room has always been yellow. And see, the luggage of the people...
I wish to see all the rooms in the hotel. I want to know what you have done with my mother.
It mattered not that Monsieur Ogie protested his utter bewilderment at the young woman's claims, nor that he insisted that she had arrived at the hotel alone, for Valerie Monckton knew that she and her mother had arrived at the Hotel de Villars together, and something dreadful had happened to her. Where had the odious Monsieur Ogie secreted her, and why? She had been shown every room in the hotel, and still there was no sign of her mother. She was sitting forlornly in the foyer when she saw Dr. Colbert himself hurrying towards the exit.
Dr. Colbert, a moment, if you please.
Oui, mademoiselle.
My mother.
Yep. I don't think I had the pleasure of meeting her.
But you treated her earlier today. You said she had pneumonia. You said I was to go to your rooms at Saint-Ouen to fetch medication for her. I even took your carriage.
Sorry, mademoiselle, I have not the faintest idea of what you are talking.
I am talking about my mother, sir, my mother. What have you done with her? Where is she? You and Monsieur Audrey have locked her away from her.
Mademoiselle, I beg of you, I do not have any
doctor, idea. Can I assist you? Is something wrong? Oh, mademoiselle. Surely you are...
I shall go to the police. I speak to the British ambassador. You are lying, both of you. Are...
Come, mademoiselle. You are unwell.
There is nothing wrong with me.
Yes, sir, perhaps I should help the young lady, sir, as if she were to rest.
Don't touch me. Don't you dare touch me.
I'm exceedingly sorry, Miss Monckton, but I really cannot believe that a reputable hotel like the Hotel de Villars would deliberately and in broad daylight abduct your mother from her room.
She was sick, Sir Edward. The hotel manager called in his doctor friend.
Yes, you told me all this, but how do you account for the difference in the room? I mean, dash it all, young lady. How could anyone possibly entirely redecorate a room, not to mention find new furniture, and all in the space of 4 hours? It simply isn't feasible.
I know it sounds impossible, but I...
No, my dear, there's more to this than meets the eye.
But that is entirely what I say, sir.
No, you misunderstand me. I mean more to your story.
But it isn't a story, it's the truth. I shall swear it on the Bible if you so wish it. My mother and I...
I've heard enough, my dear, and frankly, I'm not convinced. So, if you will excuse me, I have some rather pressing appointments.
But, Sir Edward, I have no one else to turn to.
Try the gendarmerie.
I have already been to them. They don't believe me either.
Well, my dear, there it is. Good afternoon.
Valerie Monckton eventually returned to England, where she was certified as insane and lodged in a mental asylum.
I am not insane. I'm not. I am not insane. I'm not.
Of course, there is one possible explanation. Her mother had perhaps contracted plague while she and her daughter had crossed India. If the doctor had recognized this, he could well have conspired with the hotel manager to conceal the story, for it could well have wrecked the great exposition. However, there is one other point. Could they have redecorated the room 342 in 4 hours? And what had become of Mrs. Monckton's body? Well, I'm afraid the mystery would have to remain. Good afternoon. Do drop by again when you're passing. Oh, don't forget your cameo.
That was Tales of Antiquity, written and produced by Kenneth Hendrick.